Now, before we get started, I wanted to make sure that I give a special shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind body coach based out of Los Angeles, and you might remember that she guest hosted the podcast back in January and also came on live with me back in August of 2021. Jeannie facilitates breathwork to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and decrease pain. Are you having trouble calming the monkey mind? She knows all about that. It's not about controlling or managing your stress or your thoughts. Instead, it's about shifting and improving the relationship that you have with them. You see, Jeannie spent 16 plus years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her physically and mentally exhausted. She healed herself completely and is obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. Looking to decrease negative self-talk, regulate your nervous system, and heal your TMS symptoms? You should reach out to her. Check out her website, www.jeanniekulwin, that's JeannieKulwin.com. Sign up for a free 30-minute consult so you can get more info and see if it's a good fit for the two of you to work together. Welcome back to the podcast. It is Thursday, May the 12th, 2022. Wanted to make sure that I give a shout out to the patrons of the podcast. If you're interested in supporting the show, monetarily speaking, I have this group and they're called patrons. And you go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. It helps pay some of the bills, keep the lights on, keep the voice going, keep the episodes rolling on, and all that stuff. So go over there, take a look. Let me give a shout out. I'll start from the first ever patron, which is Barb. And Barb joined November 16th, 2018. And then Arnie jumped on November 17th, 2018, which is just crazy that we're in 4 years of support. So thank you from the both of you. Brian jumped on in 2019, and then Julie, and then Ross, Christina, Anthony, and then in 2020, Michael and Tony and Kelly and Irina and Mindy and Jason all jumped on. And then 2021 brought me John, James, Sylvie, Sasha, and Dominic. And then here in 2022, Enda, Elise, Amanda, Paul, Brent, Emily, and Patricia. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. Again, go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. We've got a fun one today. It is a Canadian-based psychotherapist that is going to come on and talk about... I found him on YouTube, and I go a little bit into that and how to find it, and you can find links for his content and for his website in the show notes, but it is Tanner Murtaugh, out of Canada. So without further ado, this is Tanner and I. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am Eddie Lennonson, of course, and I'm excited because I love Canadians, and on the line with me right now is Tanner Murtaugh from Pain Psychotherapy Canada. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So Tanner, I found you, it's funny because now I'm looking at the published date of this video, but I was having a little bit of a struggle throughout March and April with some relapse of some symptoms after forever, essentially, with not having any. And one of my suggested videos was how to do somatic tracking, and it was by you. And I hadn't heard of you, and I left a comment on the YouTube video figuring this guy's never going to get back to me. And you got back to me, and here we are. How about that?
Yeah, that's amazing how we came together. Yeah.
small world. So I guess maybe for starters, I'm always very fascinated by people that work in this field, particularly as therapists, and how, A, kind of what drove them to working within pain psychology, but did you originally go to school with the intent of working with pain psychology? And I think those stories are always fascinating. So maybe we'll begin there. Like initially, yeah. If you and I were talking, how old are you, if you don't mind my asking?
I'm 32.
If you and I were talking when you were, say, 16, what was the plan of what you were going to do with the rest of your life?
Oh my goodness! So this is a bit of a long story. So hopefully that's right.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah. So when I was 16, actually, I guess kind of my journey with like chronic pain started kind of fairly young, like in my teenage years, more when I was just struggling with dealing with like emotions in general, I would say. So I think, yeah, you know, since I was like a kid, like I remember being like just like a highly sensitive kid for sure. And pretty emotionally charged. And so, you know, it's funny you say like the age 16. So I think, you know, in my adolescent years, like I actually at first initially became very like heavily addicted to like drugs and alcohol.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And so it probably started, I can't remember exactly. It was probably around the age of like 14 and just like got progressively worse. And so really like when I think back on it, and especially kind of with this kind of mind body lens, like it was just a way to cope with like the emotions I was feeling, like being in high school, doing all sorts of different things, right? And so that really like my life quickly deteriorated probably over like the course of like 3 years, until basically my parents said they had enough, and thankfully they did, but they put me in like a treatment center that was like mandated at the time.
Yeah.
And I was probably like, I think I was almost 18. So like my plan was like, you know, I'm going to wait this out and leave. Right. And then, you know, like that treatment was over the course of probably like 7.5 months. And luckily, like I got sober, have remained sober since then. But that really like trajected me towards, you know, just being like a therapist in general, right? Yeah. And I think at the time, like it was really around, like I wanted to work in the addictions field. But, you know, and afterwards, so I was probably like 18 when I got out of drug treatment. And, you know, I actually was quite carefree. Life was really good for a number of years. And I started to go to school, to kind of be like a counselor. Right. And, was in my undergrad, and kind of my perfectionistic tendencies like really took off. And, like I was excessively working and looking back, at the time, and I had changed my major once, and life just started to kind of pick up. And, you know, being an adult, you know, there's a lot of roles and responsibilities, right?
Yeah.
And just pressures. So from there, like, is when kind of my chronic pain journey kind of began. Like I think I was probably like in my early 20s, so I was 22 23 or something of that nature. And that kind of led me towards this field, right? So I kind of did the regular, like I, in terms of my pain, like my pain first started, like I'm a really active guy, which I know you are too, Eddie. And,
yeah.
And so like I, at the time, like I, even though I, like I graduated drug treatment, like I was very intense in other areas, right? So I was very intense with my exercise. Like I was doing a lot of like bodybuilding stuff. And at the time when my chronic pain started, like I was, me and my friend were like training for like our first triathlon. And so there was like a lot of running I remember doing at that time when the pain started. Like I was probably running like 50, 60 kilometers like a week.
Oh, right? Wow. Yeah.
Trying to prep and probably getting a little too intense about it. And, you know, from there, like, I remember my right knee, like, just really hurt after one of these runs I had. And coincidentally, looking back, it was right when I had changed my major in school, and was actually feeling, like, quite stressed that, like, if I was making the wrong decision. And then from there, like, my chronic pain lasted probably, like, 3 or 4-ish years. And really, it just spread like intensely over those years. So first was my knee, then it spread to my other knee, and then my shoulders both started hurting. And then I think eventually, like kind of my worst pain was probably my back and my hips were just like so painful.
Now what? Because I want to stop right there, just because I think that the I think like the athlete conundrum is really fascinating, in that like, I interview a lot of people on this show who aren't necessarily active. They have this sudden pain issue, and maybe the belief at the time was that it, you know, they're not necessarily active and they picked up something wrong, and, you know, that seems feasible to them. However, to like an athlete that's used to doing strenuous things, like you sort of maybe start to have this narrative in your head where, you know, your hips start to hurt, and it started with your knee, the knee's connected to the hip bone's connected to the elbow bone, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Totally.
At the time.
Yeah.
What were you telling yourself about, you know, you're starting to have, you had the knee, and then you had the hip, and then you have the shoulders, and then you have the back. And then like what at the time, like what did you think was going on? How did you justify all of this?
Totally. So the knee, you know, like you said, like it made total sense to me. I was like, okay, I pushed myself way too hard. Right. And I had injuries before. Right. So I just kind of assumed, like I just pushed it, like just take a few weeks off. Right. Like I remember being pretty at ease about it at first. And then it just didn't get better. Right. And then the next thing that hurt, I remember was, I think it was my left shoulder. And I was like military pressing. And I remember when I brought the weights down, like I felt like a pull or a pinch. And so like the first couple, I was just thought I was unlucky, right? Like I just assumed, oh, like I've been pushing myself way too hard, right? So I backed off, went to physio and kind of just assumed it would get better. And I think at the time when it started to spread to like my back and my hips, that's the time, like that's when I started to get, like, I think my mental health just went downhill, like really rapidly at that point. Right.
Yeah.
Because I just was so at a loss of like, what is happening? I had seen so many specialists, all of the scans done, right. And really most of it was coming back that, there wasn't these like major issues that was explaining it. And I think, you know, like when my back, my hips were starting to hurt, like I remember getting all sorts of tests, like for like MS and ALS and all these different things, right? Doctors trying to figure out why so quickly it was going downhill. And so, yeah, like I was pretty deep in despair, I would say at that point, like in terms of just highly anxious about any sensation in my body, pretty depressed at that point.
Yeah.
And yet actually like in my day-to-day life, I think being like perfectionistic and pretty intense in the way I live my life, like I was actually still functioning relatively quite high. Like I graduated my undergrad during that time, and was doing like quite well. Now I'm looking back, maybe I should have slowed it down at that point, which was probably part of the issue. But yeah, like by the time my back and my hips and I was really struggling to walk, like I think at the worst of it, I remember going on vacation, you know, with my in-laws and like bringing a wheelchair, cause I just had so much fear of like walking long distances. Cause it was just like so painful walking around for my back and my hips, especially.
And was it like a tightness or a tension? Like, did you ever get any sort of a, I guess like, what was the medical diagnosis about all of this stuff? Because, you know, it almost seems like they're just sort of pulled out of thin air. Like they just happened.
Yeah. So, you know, every chiropractor and physiotherapist had different explanations. You know, they found like little bits of inflammation here and there around my body that they thought could be responsible for some of it. But I remember like the last doctors I was talking to, it basically were starting to classify it as like fibromyalgia at that point,
yeah,
just because it was so widespread. And they had eliminated so many other things, right? So closer to the end, before I kind of started on more this mind-body journey, that was the diagnosis that was getting thrown around by quite a few specialists I saw.
And so at that time, like to me, if you would have told me, if you would have said the term fibromyalgia 6 or 7 years ago to me, it almost sort of would have seemed like a death sentence to an athlete. Like, how did you feel at that point in time?
Yeah. Like I think when I heard that, I just felt even more in despair. And, you know, I can't remember how old I was when I got was being told that, but I was young, right? Like in my mind, I was just like, what has happened, right? Because I was so physically active and fit before that. You're right. It did seem like this death sentence for sure when it was kind of taking place, and kind of just sank me even further, in terms of kind of like my mental health around like the pain and what was going on in my body.
And at this point in time, you're in your mid or late 20s, right?
I was in my mid 20s.
Okay.
I was in my mid 20s, I believe, early to mid 20s. I somewhere around that range.
And you had said that your major change happened at 22, like your change of majors for school.
Yeah. Like I remember like I changed my major, and to be fair, it was like it was just a different major. Like I changed from psychology to social work.
Got it.
So okay. We're all in the same realm anyways, but for some reason I remember at that time feeling like, and I remember making the decision, like I'm going to go as hard as I can at school. Basically to be the best. Like this was kind of the narrative at that time.
Yeah.
And I did, like, I remember like in the month prior to my pain starting, I remember waking up at like 4 a.m. and like going to school and working for like 3 hours even before class started. Right. Like it was just the next level, of pressure that I was kind of putting on myself at that time, looking back for sure.
So at some point in time, and I'd love to hear how you got there, but at some point in time, somebody either, or you came across Sarno or somebody that was in that realm. So talk about that. How do you get from this fibromyalgia diagnosis and this very physical structural basis to this is neuroplastic? How do you get there?
Yeah. So there was a couple interesting steps. Like I remember I was working with a physio for about a year, close to the tail end. And she had sat me down basically and been like, has any of this been helpful? Right. And like, really, I couldn't say yes. Like it had gotten worse. Right.
Yeah.
And she had like really gently mentioned, like, is this a result of maybe, you know, like emotional stress, right? Or something of that nature, which I remember being kind of opposed to at the point and being kind of a little bit offended when I heard that, right? As I think so many people are. And like it was just like one evening, like I was just online like frantically searching like solutions to back pain or something of that nature. And I wish I knew this individual's names. I can't find the videos anymore, but I just found this guy's YouTube channel, and he was talking about like his recovery with Dr. Sarno.
Yeah.
And this was probably at like 2 or 3 a.m. when I just couldn't sleep because my pain was too high. And that really started me kind of on that journey. Right. And it was slow at first. Like I think I heard about it, and it probably took me about a couple of months to finally just admit almost defeat and buy the book, buy one of Sarno's books. So there was a little bit of like debate in there, but I just like nothing else was working, right?
Well, and at that point in time, you had formal education in psychotherapy. So what do you think was behind your resistance to maybe buying in fully to this idea?
Yeah, like I think part of it, which is the pretty classic one, is I got offended in the sense of like, you know, maybe, you know, it means my pain's fake of some sort.
Sure.
Right. Which of course is not the case as we know, but there was that. And I think I was scared maybe what I would potentially find as well. And what that would mean if I went down this road. Right. Like I think I had created this narrative around like there was something wrong with my body and doing everything I could to try and fix it. Right.
Yeah.
And so shifting that, like, I think there was just fear involved in shifting the approach,
yep.
Which I know I've heard people talk about too, in that way. And so, yeah, like from there, really what happened is, I actually bought, Dr. Schumacher's book.
Okay.
and like unlearn your pain. And that one like really clicked for me. Like I remember being, I had finished my undergrad kind of in social work. So I knew kind of some of these ideas and how to work with them a bit. And, you know, in terms of like somatic tracking, like I actually didn't know what somatic tracking was at the time, or even if it was called that by that point, but like I was doing something very similar. And yeah, like it was pretty rapid for me, the change that kind of took place. And really like over the course of kind of like 3 months, like probably like 90% of my pain, like really, went away.
Wow.
Which was remarkable. I remember being very shocked at the time that this had actually functioned like that. And like my mental health, like just like improved like drastically with each month going by as well. When I kind of took a hold of these ideas and really started to buy into them.
What, did you do the, cause I know that like I've read Schubiner's book, there is a program associated with it. Did you do any of the program or the self ISTDP or the journaling or any of the stuff or the concepts that he talks about in that? Yeah. Or was it more of a, you know, you were a knowledge sponge basically?
Yeah. Like I think it was a mix. Like I definitely got into it and in terms of the knowledge and that really clicked. Like I think the fear of just what was happening with my body, like I felt so much safer, right?
Yeah.
But I did do quite a bit of the journaling at first, and some of the prompts in like Dr. Schubiner's book were really helpful in that regard.
Yeah.
And you know, like the classic stuff, like evidence list, something very similar to somatic tracking, and just getting really starting to feel safe with like the sensations. The pain sensations in the body, but also just really like getting in tune with like my emotions a bit.
Yeah.
And recognizing, like, I think, you know, when I first, if we go back, when I first got out of like drug treatment, right? Like I had more of this carefree attitude, and then like this perfectionistic, personality just really gripped me, and I became so intense and pressureful and self-critical, right? And I think that really did drive like a lot of, you know, what kind of took place in terms of like my mind body concerns as well.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a mix of everything. Yeah.
And at this point in time, were you starting to maybe get the thought of, hey, the sort of the, this probably isn't even the right term. So
yeah.
So I don't want to be offensive, but the like general social work, did it seem like that's still the right path, or was it like, maybe I could serve the world better focusing on pain psychology? Like at this point in time, were you at that point yet?
Yeah. Like I was debating it. I remember having all sorts of thoughts early on when I think back. I remember at one point I was like scared if I work in this field, like, will my pain always be there? Cause I'm always talking about pain, right?
Yeah.
Like all these kind of classic ideas. And I was planning on going to do like my master's in social work, right? To become like a therapist. And so it was kind of in the back of my head, like, you know, maybe this would be like really interesting and something that could be really useful to people, right? And I remember at the time looking in, like, especially in Canada, like we're a bit farther behind in this way, and there was really nothing like back in like, you know, 2015, 2016, right?
Yeah.
When I was really looking around those years. And so I was interested at that point, but I wasn't certain yet. But that idea just kind of built. And as I went on to do my master's, like it really just built that, you know, this would be a really thing I would be interested in doing and want to help people in this way. So
awesome.
Yeah.
So coming out of doing all that stuff, like I have a litany or list of the things that to me maybe made the most sense, just like physiologically speaking, or emotionally speaking, as I went through the process of first having no understanding of mind body connection or neuroplastic pain, and then kind of going through the process of seeing mine ease up and ease up and ease up and then go away. Like, I guess, what are a couple of the things that you remember, and try to, you know, take yourself back as best you can. But during that initial period of time where you really started seeing massive dents in your pain. What were a couple of maybe the light bulb concepts or moments for you?
Yeah. So, I know one of them, and even after I recovered from pain, I realized this more about myself is just this, and I know Alan Gorin talks about this, right? Like, neuroplastic pain can be more of like a preoccupation problem than a pain problem. Right. And I think that was always the case for me, even in terms of like addiction, right? Like just like always preoccupied by things, sometimes in an excited way, even with my activity level. Right.
Yeah.
But I think that was a really big light bulb moment. Like I remember driving in the car and having this realization that, the less I actually thought about the pain, when that was possible, the more the sensations tend to reduce. Right. And that, if I actually shifted my focus, to actually, my emotions, whether they're difficult or pleasant, or just actually like spending time, like enjoying life, All of a sudden some of that pain would lessen. Right. And that was a huge moment for me to kind of realize that. And I think just a big pattern for myself in recognizing even before pain, like how preoccupied I would be by school or work or exercise or whatever it was. Right. And it just kind of latched on really intensely to the pain when it first started to occur. So there was that big moment. I think the other big moment, and something actually I've thought about a lot, like recently, I think, is the idea of like, in terms of like mind body concerns or neuroplastic pain, like the elements of like, incorporate into your life kind of, play and like fun and like really spending time, like trying to enjoy yourself. Right. And it sounds obvious when I say it, right. But I know myself and I'm quick to become intense in other areas of trying to be successful or different things. And that can evaporate so quickly. Right. And so when I thought back to like, when my pain first started to occur, like it was clear that like all fun was like off the table. Like it's not fun waking up at 4 a.m. and just working until, late in the evening every single day. Right. And so some of that definitely had a part to play, just in terms of like my emotions and the level of pressure I was putting on myself.
That brings up actually, so I recorded this week's podcast yesterday and I just did like a Q&A show where people submitted questions. I think I got 23 or 24 of them, but one of them, from this guy, Dan, is exactly what you're talking about. I'd love for you to answer this, cause I answered it. And so, but because you're talking about this and you actually have the therapy background, I just pretend to be one for the most part. So here's what Dan said. He said, lately I've been thinking about fear and feeling safe in our bodies and wondering how that relates not only to pain, but to our lives in general, doing things that make us happy and what message it sends to our nervous system if we aren't doing those things, like holding off on doing sports, doing activities, seeing friends because of pain, how much that tells our brains that we must not be okay. Basically how waiting to feel better is counterproductive. So I'd love to get your take on Dan's question.
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. That's well written. And I've thought about this a lot. And I think I talk about it, even with my clients a lot lately, because you're right. Like, if we understand like, pain is that danger signal, right? And that it's being sent because our brain is feeling in danger, right? Like if you lack like being able to play in your life or have fun or enjoy things, like it just naturally causes our brain to feel more and more in danger over time. Right. Yeah. This is definitely the case, for myself. And I think so many people in kind of this mind body world, when we have those personality traits, right? Like we're just prone to placing pressure on ourselves, being self-critical, being really intense, I find, and especially for myself. And being intense in like your career and all that can be exciting at points, but it can also quickly suck the enjoyment out of it.
Yep.
And I thought about it. I watched this movie recently. It's kind of a silly movie, but I think there's a good kind of metaphor in terms of kind of mind body work. And there's a movie called Tag. I don't know if you've seen it, Eddie.
No, I've never heard of it.
So it was just kind of a silly movie. It was based on loosely based on a true story. But really all it is there was these group of men that basically 1 month of the year, in the movie, they were in their 40s, right? But 1 month of the year, they would play tag. And so, of course, it's the adult version where they're living across the country. They're traveling, dressing up, tagging their friends.
Yeah.
Just fun, right? Actually, it's in the month of May, which it is May. But I think it's just such a interesting concept, just in the sense of really prioritizing play and fun in our life. And making that intention behind that, right? Because I know even for myself, that's such an important piece of my recovery. And I know I was listening to your earlier podcast over the last couple of weeks with kind of your pain relapse. I know for myself, when I've had a pain relapse, that's a huge part to play for various reasons when that happens,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely. Sucking the fun out of everything, basically. I try to make it a priority. I was telling my boss yesterday, I don't know, of all the people I could tell, I don't know why I told him, but I was talking about how much of it, because our weather's kind of crummy right now. But on my lunch break, basically, if it's not snowing and it's not pouring down tsunami style rain, I'll usually go out and ride my motorcycle during my lunch breaks, and sometimes it'll be an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever. But then if it's sunny and it's, let's say, 60 degrees or more, I'll go and I'll ride my electric skateboard and stuff like that. People that are in professional roles find that absurd, because I think the expectation is it always needs to be you're eating lunch at your desk, you're staring at your computer, you're rushing. My whole thought is that I the play is the necessity. There basically is no push or drive to do a whole bunch of this busy work if I don't have the play prior to that. And I know that when all of this stuff started for me and it got really bad where I couldn't ignore it anymore, meaning years ago, my entire life was literally just go to work and do rehab, go to work and do rehab. Because I'd had a major shoulder surgery. So I was going through and doing the rehab, and I was doing two or three sessions a day and working. And that was my whole life. There was no play. So I definitely hear you there.
Yeah. Yeah. And totally, of course, I always tell people it's not the full solution, but I think it's such an important piece. I love the fact that you're riding your electric skateboard at lunchtime. That's great.
I see it's called a one wheel, but I see them out and I've started to see more. I've had it for a couple of years now, I see more riders that are out in the area, but I don't think I see anybody over 25. One interesting thing is, so I'm 36 and, I'm out there doing my thing and my hair is down halfway down my back and I have a bunch of tattoos and I don't look like a typical, like right now I'm wearing a suit. I just rushed from doing all my work stuff. And so I'm not dressed up for skateboarding, but there was a poll. I had started a poll on the One Wheel Facebook group, and I think the average age was it was 50. It was 45 or 50. So I was well under that, even though I don't see anybody in my town that old that's a part of it. So,
yeah. Yeah, I know. It's funny you say that, because my son, who's he's 4, almost 5. We got him a scooter last year.
Yeah.
It's one of the three wheel ones. So it's pretty easy to ride. But whenever we're out, I'm riding it half the time, because it's just it's a blast, just having those moments of play like that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So you're in practice now. Talk about your center, your practice, what it is that you're doing now.
Yeah. So it's myself and another therapist right now, at our clinic. We took, Alan Gordon's pain reprocessing therapy. So we use a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a mix of journaling and stuff, depending on where people are at. So we're using that model and do therapy kind of in different provinces within Canada. But then also, you know, we do some coaching kind of worldwide. And so, yeah, that's the idea. It's a pretty rare service actually in Canada. Like I know in the States they have quite a few, from when I was looking around, kind of like body stuff.
Yeah.
But in Canada, it's definitely a little bit farther behind. Like I always have people kind of messaging me being shocked that they're finding people. So it's definitely a lack of service. And so, yeah, it's been fun. Like we started, it's almost been a year since we kind of started doing it. And yeah, so it's been really exciting. I really enjoy the work and yeah, pain reprocessing therapy. Well, you know, and we do other stuff. Like we do that YouTube channel, just to go offer kind of like free information to people, which I have a fun time doing. And yeah, that's kind of what the practice looks like at this point. I know we're taking, Dr. Schubiner's, emotional awareness and expression training.
Oh, great.
Next month or so here. So we're hoping to add kind of that model into it as well. Just as kind of like having a mix of things for people. So
what, as we kind of wrap up here, I'm curious because you work with people that do this all the time. You went through it yourself. I would imagine that a lot of the people that come to you are probably people that have, you know, they're aware of mind body work and, they're having a tough time finding success or finding big dents in the issues or the chronicity of what it is that, you know, whatever their symptom is. If you, and I'm sure there's quite a few, but if you were to name maybe one or two blockades that you encounter with people that get stuck, what's maybe one or two themes or things to think of? There's probably 15 or 20,000 people listening to this right now around the world. And there's somebody sitting there saying, Eddie, will you just ask him? I'm stuck. And what are maybe a couple things I'm not thinking about that maybe I should start thinking about?
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of them, that really stand out, and I relate it back even to myself when I've had relapses, what kind of takes place. And of course these are just the general ones, but one is like I've talked about, like the intensity level. And so, you know, a lot of times I'll work with people, that are very high achieving, of course, right? And having these symptoms, very aware as mind body, but you know, the way they're functioning in their world, is just like really intense and on high alert all the time. And it's really, I explain to people, like, it's really hard to make a dent, sometimes in the way we're trying to recover if we're always on high alert, right? What I mean by that is like, if you're working 70 hours a week, and you're just using these strategies and you have the knowledge, like sometimes that can be a gap. And I get it too. Like I relate to that because I think, like so many, like, you know, part of my worth, very much since a child was I've associated with me being high achieving and successful. Right. So that's a hard one to battle against because you're kind of choosing, like I tell people, like, you're kind of choosing between like potentially being really successful or being more happy. Right. Because you're right. Like if we're less perfectionistic and intense, like we may not be as successful. I still think you can. I still think there's totally a route in that way. But sometimes people get caught on that, right?
Yeah. And
that goes even to like the way we function with it, right? Like if, I love all the resources this community has, but if we're reading them and trying to consume them in this very intense, like high alert, kind of panicky way, it kind of goes against what the idea is, right? By just causing the brain to feel more in danger. So I think that's one of the more main ones that I can see hanging people up, and those an issue for myself. I'm trying to think of other ones. I think another one is, and I think for myself, like I had one really big pain relapse, maybe like 2.5 years ago or so, where it lasted, probably similar to you, probably lasted about like six weeks or so. And you know, at the time, like, I think I was just incredibly uncomfortable with dealing with some really stressful stuff. Like, at the time, my daughter was born very premature, like probably 30 weeks, right? Oh, so wow. She was born like 25% early, which we had gone through with our son. But the second time around, we knew like the seriousness of it, right?
Yeah.
Which is completely fine. But like, I remember at the time, like being so uncomfortable, like in my skin, to just feel what was going on. And, you know, like a lot of times when we talk about like somatic tracking with like pain sensations, right? Like a similar process works with like our emotions, right? Like really just giving yourself the space to feel not okay and feel these difficult things, right? And, you know, that's not like a one session and you're done kind of thing, right? Like it takes practice and getting comfortable with those sensations in our body. And the more comfortable we get, like when those difficult emotions come up, the brain's just feeling less in danger overall, right? Because yep. We're used to them. And so I think that can be a hang up for some people too, because it's scary. I get it. Like when we're dealing with a lot of heavy stuff in our life, right? So those are kind of the two main ones, I think, Eddie, that I see.
Yeah, it's interesting. The the way that I last year, it's weird because 2021 and 2022, I had relapses close to the same day. It was right around March 1st. I don't remember the exact days, but it's almost like there's some seasonality to it. But last year's hurt tremendously worse. It's like tough to put if this time was an 8 out of 10, last year was a 14 out of 10. But that relapse lasted a day or a day and a half. And this one lasted so much longer and lingered. And the best attribution I have to that is really in line with what you're saying, where, you know, last year I just had this kind of confidence where I know that there's nothing structurally wrong. I'm going to be okay. And I didn't do anything. And I took my normal rest day. I rest every Wednesday, which I did. This happened on a Wednesday. I rested on Thursday like I always do. And then I was back at it on Friday training. And it was as if nothing happened. I was actually going back looking at some of my Instagram posts, you know, a week later, and I was lifting maximum weights. and it was kind of surprising that this one had taken so long. But I think that a big part of it was, like you keep saying, bringing an intensity, but bringing an intensity to healing was just keeping me further and further back. Because like you can really, you know, you can definitely medicalize a TMS problem thinking it's structural, meaning you're going doctor to doctor, chiropractor to chiropractor, physical therapist and all that stuff. And that can really trap you. But I think that alternatively, you can also do way too much TMS healing stuff. And that is probably equally as, I mean, you're in the right arena now, but it may even be equally as bad as doing too much physical stuff.
Yeah. And I like that. That's well said. Like you're in the right arena, but you're going about it the wrong way. Right. Yeah. Because as we know, like just too much focus on fixing and trying to make it go away just escalates it. Yep. Right. So, and similar to you, as you had said, like when that relapse had lasted like 6 weeks, which was probably my longest one since kind of recovering. Right. Like it lasted because there was such a pressure to make it go away and panic. And I think just given my circumstance, I was already on high alert with dealing with stuff. So like it was just intensified my focus and fixation on getting this to go away. Right.
Awesome. Well, Tanner, I really appreciate you being here. We're going to do a fake goodbye, but hang on the line. So thanks so much for being here. Remind everybody where they can, because one thing that I feel like let's say 90% of the TMS therapists and coaches that I talk to are female. So I think sometimes there's kind of been a stigma around men seeking mental health help, but there's a very large contingent of listenership for this podcast that are men. So where can they find more about you if they're interested?
Yeah. So my agency website is painpsychotherapy.ca. And then, that YouTube channel you mentioned is just my name. So Tanner Murtaugh and then MSW, RSW.
Awesome.
Those are probably the best couple of ways.
Cool. Well, I'll link that in the show notes. Like I said, hang on the line, but thanks for joining us.
Sounds great. Thanks, Eddie.